Get all of the reality TV talk you can handle with a subscription to Rob Has a Podcast. Select from either the full feed or select by show at robhasawebsite.com/showfeeds. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, and a lot of you guys, I didn't even have to say that this was coming up. You guys figured it out on your own. We got down to 12 people, and now, believe it or not, this is the fourth season in a row when we're doing this. I'm not sure if the very first time we did it with 12 people. I think maybe the first time we did it somewhere a little further on, but now this is making his fourth appearance here. If not, actually, I think maybe even more because we did a Big Brother podcast. This could be number five for our guest from ESPN, AJ Mass.
Hey, Rob, what's going on?
Yeah, AJ, is that right? Could that be five appearances now?
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I've kind of lost track. It's kind of just become kind of like family. So, you know?
Yes. Into rarefied air now for AJ Mass.
Now, does that mean we go into a special room if I've been in the Five Timers Club? I get to hang out with Paul Simon and Tom Hanks.
No, you get to hang out with Stephen Fishback and Tyson and Matt Hoffman.
Okay, sure. I could be an apostle. That's fine.
Yes. Well, there, and we'll talk about the 12 apostles. Yes, and so very fitting on a weekend when we talk about where you started in your book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, of course, available on the Amazon.com, and you can go to robhasawebsite.com/AJMass if you want to check out AJ's first book. On a Easter weekend, we'll talk about 12 is the perfect number. Of course, that was the number of disciples that Jesus had.
Indeed. It's a magical number. It's 3 times 4. It's 4 times 3. It's 6 times 2. It divides so evenly into so many different groupings.
Yes, on an Easter weekend, though, perhaps the more magical number for Jesus might have been 11 if he could have, got Judas out of the mix.
You're a Judas.
Yes. Coming full circle to reality TV. All right. So first off, AJ, you're the boy of summer that this is probably not the right nickname, that fantasy baseball is right around the corner. Are you just totally swamped right now with opening day on Monday?
Well, Sunday night is the first game. The American League battle between the Texas Rangers and the Houston Astros. But yes, I am. I'm fairly swamped. I mean, most of the preseason stuff is already done by now because we had to pretty much start in January to get ready for opening day. We're actually already looking ahead to the NFL draft coming up next month, so we're already moving into football a little bit. But yeah, it's still got the football tail end there picking up again. We got the baseball season kicking off. And plus, I'm in the process of writing book number 2. So that is really, with all this reality TV, where does the time go?
Yeah, I was thinking about this before we got on the call of how do you have time to keep up with all of this reality TV? Because I have a hard time keeping up with it. And and then if you had me on to talk about, some fantasy sports, I would be, I have a hard time following what's going on in another thing. How are you able to do it all?
I put the pro in procrastination.
I don't believe that.
Yeah, no. If I know I have that deadline on Thursday to get that article in and it's Wednesday, it's like, I can fill an hour and listen to, a podcast on catching me up to speed on something I missed or something, and it's not easy though. Not easy.
All right. Well, let's get into it. We'll talk about the Survivor Caramone. And as we like to do with AJ in his book, How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, he talks about how with the number 12 is such a perfect number. It's the ideal number of people that you'd want to have in your fantasy sports league. And if you do it right, you should have one of these 12 archetypes or all 12 of these archetypes in your league, and we will assign them to the 12 remaining players on Survivor Caramone. But AJ, are you enjoying this season of Survivor?
I am enjoying this season of Survivor. I'm not a huge fan of the whole fans versus favorites format.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather... I've gotten a little more used to and comfortable with the fact that if they, maybe bring back one or two people to be the captains. That I'm kind of learning to be okay with. But I just think the game is so out of whack, where when you have one group of people, the fans, who just, you know, are complete noobs and they're still finding their footing, and the other tribe of favorites already is operating on a level that, you know, will take the fans like weeks to reach. It's really not fair from the get-go. You know, if they wanted to mix it up half and half, maybe, but to just put them on two separate tribes, it just really takes a long time for the game to get going. And you know, it really was a reset, you know, when they finally decided to do the swap, and now the game has started, and now I'm really interested again.
Yeah, I had thought coming into this season, before I had seen how they were dividing the tribes, I thought that this fans versus favorites was going to be half favorites on each tribe. So let's say they started off the game, each tribe was five returning players and five new players. And I think that would have been a more interesting dynamic to do than what they actually did.
Yeah, I agree. Although, you know, not that that would have necessarily worked either. I mean, not to switch shows for a second, but I mean, we saw on Big Brother when they brought back the six people and it was six versus six, you know, basically of returners and newbies. They couldn't figure out to work together and make it a true even playing field to begin with. So what makes me think that they would have done that if they had split the tribes?
Well, the difference between the Big Brother and Survivor, it would have been almost like the Big Brother equivalent is like if it was like sort of like a Survivor One world where the favorites could have all gotten together and conspired and said, hey, look, whatever we do, let's vote out the fans. Whereas if you had them on different beaches, they wouldn't necessarily know that that was the plan. Yes, it might have happened that all five of the favorites on both tribes got together, but I think it would have been interesting to see if a guy like Malcolm, coming right off the bat, has more in common with the other returning fans as opposed to the favorites, since he's never met the favorites before that day that they started the game. So I think it might have been a more interesting dynamic, and certainly maybe more fair in the challenges.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right there. I think it would have been more interesting than how we started here. But you know, it's almost like they just from a producer's standpoint, when the editor's putting it together, it's like they also think they had to show us the favorites first because we knew them. These are the people we're, you know, allegedly tuning in to see. And, you know, more of the action was going on the fans camp because they were losing. And it kind of made the show a little bit off balance for the first few weeks.
And that being said, if I would have come to you on, you know, February 12th, the day before the premiere, and said, all right, AJ, I'm going to tell you, let me get you ready for the season. I'm going to tell you, when we get down to 12 people, how are you going to like it if there are eight of these returning all-stars still in the game by the eighth episode and only four of these people that you have no idea who they are? Wouldn't that sound like this is going to be a good season? I think most people would say, oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
I think, yeah, on one level, but if it you know, turned into a pogonging, and you knew that the next month wouldn't have counted because it's fan going out, maybe not. You know, I just like to see strategy being played. And and I think that we're definitely seeing that. And that's why the season is working, because it turns out we have a hyperactive favorites group that is willing to like strategize amongst themselves, even though they're not actually voting people off on a regular basis before the merge.
So I guess my point is, if you had to have a pogonging, wouldn't you rather have it in the first half of the season where one tribe totally gets pogonged, and then it seems like it could be a very interesting second half of the season with these eight returning players? Let's see how that's going to disassemble, with all due respect to Johnny Number Five.
No disassemble, Number Five. Yeah, I mean, given the makeup of the cast of characters that are left, I think perhaps we probably would have been a little bit more excited about the next few weeks if we hadn't had Hans again and he was still around in the mix, knowing that there was going to be this big blow up to come. You know, now that, you know, we've kind of had the storm and now we're just cleaning up from it still a little bit, and I think it slowed it down a little bit. I'm hoping that that the excitement, once they truly you know, merge instead of swap, that'll kind of kick things into hyperdrive.
AJ, as a consummate sports fan and professional, what's the sports equivalent of Hansageddon? Have we ever seen an athlete have a Hansageddon to the degree which Brandon had?
Oh, absolutely. My favorite person who I ever dealt with as a major league mascot was Carl Everett. Mm-hmm. And Carl Everett was he was an interesting fellow because he didn't believe that dinosaurs really existed. That was one of his claims to fame, and he had some interesting views on life in general. But he was such a hothead, and there was one game when he just completely lost his mind and headbutt an umpire, and and had to be separated from the umpire by both teams. So. That was pretty much a Hansageddon-esque moment in baseball.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of, are there any other teams that, or any other incidents where, then they had to get rid of the player off the team? How about Randy Moss when the Patriots traded him away to the Vikings? Where did he, was he complaining about the food? Was that with the Vikings? That was with the Patriots.
I'm pretty sure it was with the Vikings that he was complaining about the food, but that incident doesn't stick with me nearly as much. The blow up isn't all that crazy. There have been a lot of people who tweeted about when Twitter first got going. A lot of the players were tweeting that the NFL players were tweeting that the food in camp was bad, and they put like a moratorium on tweets because that's not what Twitter should be for. And now players like Aaron Foster are tweeting out pictures of their own MRIs and stuff and CAT scans and x-rays, and it's like, okay, maybe complaining about the food is probably preferable to revealing that your bones are broken.
It's almost like, I'm trying to think in the sports equivalent, like I'm trying to find the example of a person whose behavior was so outrageous within the group that the group has to get rid of them. I guess it happens a lot where guys get cut, but maybe in sort of like a more public sort of way.
Well, I mean, Ron Artest in basketball, would just go into the stands and beat fans up.
Yeah,
it doesn't really get worse than that.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one. Yeah, I guess the Survivor equivalent is like at the reunion show, if somebody goes into the stands and tries to fight one of the people in the audience, I guess that's the Survivor equivalent.
We'd all watch and we'd love it.
We'd love it. Did you like Hansageddon? I know a lot of people felt like they felt icky about the whole Hansageddon thing.
I mean, given what happened, it wasn't that bad. It's not like he went off and slugged Phillip or something ridiculous like that. I mean, I thought that's where it was going to end up. I thought Probst did a great job of handling him. And from that standpoint, it actually made it enjoyable to watch because he had him under such control that it didn't get to the point where I would have felt really, really bad watching it. I my feeling is that he probably shouldn't have been on the show. I think that's a casting issue. Mm-hmm. But once he was there, I don't think it's nearly as bad as it could have been.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, who knows how much of that was him just saying, I'm not really going to hit anybody and might as well go out in a blaze of glory since I know I'm going out.
Now, who's been impressing you so far this season?
Well, I think that kind of goes hand in hand with what we're about to do.
Okay.
What we're about to do. So let me not.
All right. So
let's bury the lead on this
one. Good. Very good. All right. So here's what I'd like to do on this one, because I know you guys like to play along. Let me go through from AJ's book. Let me tell you the 12 roles. And now we always come up to we always have a little bit of a trouble where there's the two people that are the marriage of convenience, the two people that are playing together. So should we include Julia in this mix as an honorary 13th person?
No, we're not going to, because what I've done is I've combined two others each time we've done this. Because we've always had the marriage one and the marriage two. I've always combined X Factor and Loophole. So.
Okay, good. All right, so here we go. So I will give you the role, and then we'll get a little explanation of what this person is if people want to play along at home. I'll also post the 12 roles on the website if you want to take a look at that and follow along in case you don't have a pad and paper with you. Role number one, the loose cannon. Tell us about the loose cannon, but not who is the loose cannon this season.
Right. Well, I mean, had he lasted this long, Hansageddon. I mean, yes. Loose cannon. Someone who is going to just you never know what they're going to do. If they're in an alliance, they might turn on the alliance. If they might, you know, go nuts at the drop of a hat. The person you expect to have a Hansageddon or just completely go off on their alliance and snap at any point.
Yes, and basically any Hans will always be the loose cannon.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. What would happen if there was an all Hans family fantasy league? What if all the whole Hans clan got together and started a fantasy football league?
Wow. I think whoever was commissioner and probably would be Russell. Because why would he cede control? Russell would probably go in using his league manager powers and just alter all the results anyway. So really, why bother playing? He's going to end up winning the championship.
The scoring system is flawed. All right. Then number two is the diplomat.
Yeah, diplomat is kind of the person you'd want to be in charge of your fantasy league if you're doing a fantasy league. But, you know, someone who's willing to be rational, who can reach across alliances, kind of, you know, bring people together and just say, all right, you know, let's, you guys hate this guy. You guys hate this guy. Let's work together and see if we can figure out, you know, and come to a consensus here.
All right. Number three, old reliable.
Old reliable is the person you don't really think is going to be able to win Survivor, but they're always going to be one of the two or three people left in every competition. They're the person who's going to be very high on the trustworthy scale. Mm-hmm. Just someone you can count on when you're counting the people in your alliance. All right, do we have him, her? Yeah, we got that guy. That's all reliable. And they're going to compete well in the competitions as well.
Yeah, AJ, let's throw out a couple of former Survivor examples when we do this. Okay, obviously the loose cannons would be any member of the Hans family.
Or Tarzan.
Yes.
Didn't know what was coming out of his mouth on any given moment. Old reliable would be someone like Rick.
Yes, Butch Lockley is another good old reliable.
Troy Zan, you knew was going to do well in every competition, and you know you could trust him within the alliance. He didn't turn on anybody. That's kind of who we're looking at there.
Okay, old reliables. Do they have to be old to be old reliable?
They don't have to, but they generally turn out to be because you know they've got those years on them, the wisdom of years. So they're not the young hotheads,
and they're tired.
They ain't got time for this. Yeah. Artists ain't got time for this.
Ain't nobody got time for that. That's old reliable. What about the diplomat? Who's some good Survivor diplomats?
Coach was a perfect diplomat. Coach was someone who could just go across and try and pull you in and keep you in check. Coach was the perfect diplomat. Sabrina was a diplomat. She was able to talk with the guys, talk with the girls' alliance. And Penner was a perfect diplomat. Penner was just calm and rational. I hear your point of view, and you know, hey, Lisa, you know, you're good. I don't do the Penner.
Lisa, who's good? If it was good, it was bad. We're not gonna worry about that. We'll all get together, we'll have something to eat. It'll be nice.
Are you with me? If you're with me, if everyone, I promise, I will take you there.
Yeah. All right, so the ninja.
The ninja is the person who, you know, you start naming the people who are on the season and who are still left in the game, and you end up with like 11, and you go, who's that other one? Who's that other one? They're probably getting the invisible edit. You just don't, you know, like, what, who? And when you go back and remember the season, you're like, oh, yeah, they were on the show. People from the past few seasons who were the ninja would be Whitney,
mm-hmm.
You know, Jay.
Yeah, the Purple Kellys of the world. We just lost a good ninja in Julia.
Julia was someone who's like, you know, I remember her. Yeah, that kind of thing. Just who was this person? Katie was one of them from last season. Mm-hmm. Like. Who? Like, yeah. If you're saying who, that's the ninja.
Yeah. What did you think of Cochran's comparison of Julia to vanilla ice cream?
You know, he could have just compared her to vanilla ice. Because, you know, we're not going to see her in 15 years.
Yes. You don't know. She's on the NASCAR circuit. She could be the next Danica Patrick.
Yeah, sure.
She could be on a GoDaddy commercial by the Super Bowl.
Go Daddy.
All right. How about the fresh meat? Now, we had a lot of fresh meat this season. That's what they should have called this season.
Yeah, exactly.
Survivor 26, fresh meat.
Mm-hmm. Well, and fresh meat in a normal season would be the person who clearly came into Survivor and never saw an episode, has no idea that they're even playing a game and that there is strategy. They're probably going to be the one who's going to throw out the, oh, I came here to make friends line. They just don't get that they're on a reality show that's a competition, and they'll, you know, they no strategic sense whatsoever. Or just get left behind. Just you're like, you're wondering why they're being dragged along.
Yes. So fresh meat examples.
Cat was fresh meat. Cat. Oh, wait. We got. Whoa. What? We're in a challenge. Oh, yeah. Oh, what? Oh, I'll just fall in the water. Edna was fresh meat.
How about Suzette from Big Brother Canada?
Oh, fresh meat. And a lot of it. Hey.
Oh, poor Suzette. Okay, how about the idiot savant?
Now, the idiot savant is an interesting case, because the idiot savant is someone who does very well and usually goes very far in the game. They come up with creative strategies sometimes that shouldn't work, and yet they do. You wonder why they're still around, and you point to some moves they've made, and they seem to be these harebrained schemes, but somehow everything falls in their favor. They're winning and succeeding at this game in spite of the fact they really have no clue. It's a step up from Fresh Meat, who tend to be of the dumber variety. These are people who are trying strategies, and it's just like, oh, yeah, that worked. It really shouldn't have. Jonas was a perfect example of this. He come up with these harebrained schemes, and somehow they wouldn't backfire on them exactly the way they should have. I think RC was definitely a perfect idiot savant.
AJ, do not use our beloved Miss Survivor and the word idiot in the same sentence.
Now, idiot is not stupid. Idiot just means
how
that
dare you?
It just means that their plans did not come to fruition. If RC had not chosen Abby as her confidant, mm-hmm. she probably would have gone a lot farther, and she did last longer than she probably should have, given the fact that she chose Abby as her confidant.
Let me give you the classic Survivor idiot savant. How about our esteemed Dr. Sean from the original season of Survivor, of the famous alphabet strategy?
Exactly. Should that have worked under any circumstances? No, it shouldn't. And yet.
Well, what was smart about it, actually, was that all of the people from Tagi all had names that started with the end of the alphabet, like Rich and Rudy and Sue and Kelly to a lesser degree, while all of the people from the Pagong Alliance were all names like Jervis and Greg and Jenna and Colleen and Gretchen, which were all at the top of the alphabet. So we have to give Dr. Sean a little bit. It was a stupid strategy on the surface, but there was some smarts there to it.
Oh, sure. And he could have always, you know, thrown a monkey wrench into it and gone, oh, I said alphabetical, but Wigglesworth is a W. Yeah.
Yes, alphabetical last name. All right. The mad scientist.
The mad scientist is someone who just can't turn off the strategic brain. Just has to always be plotting, even if they're in a solid four or five person alliance and they win challenge after challenge and don't have to be doing any scheming. This person cannot help themselves. They are always plotting and trying to maneuver and they just can't stop.
Mm-hmm.
Alicia from the
Survivor One World.
Yeah, from One World.
Not she was from one, Survivor Australia.
Not the one wagging their finger in your face. No. Ozzy was a mad scientist. Ozzy was always plotting and planning. He happened to be very good at the challenges, so it didn't come back to hurt him as much because he always had immunity around his neck, mm-hmm. but he was always plotting and planning.
He did come up with an idea to vote himself out of the game.
And really, how much planning do you have to do? I mean, you have to you really exhaust all your other options before you come up with that gem, huh?
All right, how about the cheerleader?
Cheerleader is, you know, someone who's always, yay, the tribe. We have to do what's best for the tribe. They're really not in this game most of the time to win, or so it seems. It's more about, oh, we have to do what's best for the tribe, or we have to do what's best for the alliance and anything that helps. You wonder, like, if they realize that at some point, in order to win, they're going to have to vote off their friends. They just seem to be, yay, us, all the time. And, you know, the cheerleader is generally an upbeat and positive person who has a lot of likability to them. So they're usually cut near the end because people are afraid that they're the ones who, if they get to jury, are going to have the most support.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa Welchel was a cheerleader. That right there. There's your cheerleader. She was just like, oh, we have to do what's best for us. Come on. I'm never going to betray us. Let's do what's best for us.
All right. The double X factor.
Yeah, the double X factor is for fantasy leagues where you have pretty much an all male thing. You know, the double X factor is simply just have a woman, someone who's coming at things from a completely different perspective. But in terms of Survivor, the X factor is just someone who is completely different from everybody else. It would be like the one woman in an all-male alliance would possibly be that. Or it could be, you know, the one person who has actually seen the show before on a tribe full of people who are, you know, just taken out of central casting.
Mm-hmm.
We've combined the X factor with Captain Loophole. Captain Loophole is someone who is just a complete student of the rules and regulations, a super fan, someone who knows every little quirk and idiosyncrasy and knows how the game is played inside and out. And the reason that I've combined the two is because very often the thing that sets the X factor apart is the fact that they are the super fan. I mean, Cochran in his first season was completely the X factor because he was the super fan. He knew strategy inside and out, and he was the one who was on the outs with his original tribe. He was the one who was different. He was considered different, and they treated him as such.
I think that is often the case, but I think that, let me go back to Big Brother Canada here. Would you say that isn't Gary Glitter a great double X factor?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
The one person not like the others in the house?
Yeah, someone who really stands out and that everybody can look at and go, okay, they're not like me.
Okay, so do you want to talk more about Captain Loophole, or you feel like we covered Captain Loophole?
No, I think we covered it because, like I said, in Survivor terms, they've kind of merged together into one personality. Yeah,
they know all the rules in the rule book and how to break them as well. The Marriage of Convenience.
Marriage of Convenience is simply two people, you know, an odd couple or two people who are in an alliance thrown together by necessity, who pretty much vote as one. They share a reign. There's usually a one in one, 1B kind of thing. There's definitely a pecking order within the two. And, you know, Sophie and Albert was the perfect example of they were together. You weren't going to break them apart. And we saw very, very late in the game that Sophie was the number one in that when she said, hey, you drop out.
Yeah, drop your stack, I believe was the quote.
I mean, you can't get more obvious that there's an alpha than ordering the other person. But yeah, I mean, generally speaking, we get this power couple that survives all attempts to break them apart. And that's the Marriage of Convenience.
You know, something to note here, now that we said this is the fourth time that AJ and I have done this exercise with the season. If we go back and listen to the old shows, I believe here, let me give you the Marriages of Conveniences. A, as you mentioned, the first time season we did this was during South Pacific, and we talked about Sophie and Albert, Marriage of Convenience. The next season, Marriage of Convenience, I believe we said was Kim and Chelsea.
Yep.
Season after that, last season, Marriage of Convenience, Malcolm and Denise, Marriage Correct. Of Convenience. Are you noticing a pattern here?
Yeah. And the Marriage of Convenience, I mean, in my power rankings, the Marriage of Convenience are the person who is the alpha, who ends up being the alpha in the Marriage of Convenience, is almost a lock to go final two. Mm-hmm. If they go final two or three, if they go final three, it's a lock. The reason that the second person isn't is because usually when you get to four, marriage one cuts marriage two loose.
Well, in the case of Sophie and Albert, they both went to the finals, and Albert got no votes. In the case of Kim and Chelsea, I believe Kim won the game and Chelsea got no votes. Yep. And in the case of Malcolm and Denise, I guess I think it's a little more unclear who was actually the alpha there. I feel like that of the three that we're talking about, maybe that was the truest partnership of the two. And it turned out that Denise would have gone to the end with Malcolm. I think Malcolm would have gone to the end with Denise, but for the sake of the immunities there. Sophie and Kim also both won their final immunity as well. In the case of Denise and Malcolm, it turned out that Scoopin won the final immunity, and that sort of threw things off the track.
Right, I think Malcolm would have been the one had he been able to not shaky hands.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay, and then finally the mad scientist.
No, we did the mad scientist.
Oh, sorry, my page turned.
The narcissist. Yeah, the narcissist is, well, simply put, someone who's very much in love with themselves. They like to hear themselves talk. They think they're the greatest survivor player who's ever existed, and they can do no wrong. And certainly, when the time comes that they get blindsided and voted out of the game, their exit interview is something to the effect of, "Well, of course they voted me out because I was the biggest threat."
Mm-hmm.
There's no talking them into any strategy that they don't already have formed in their mind themselves. They're truly in love with the sound of their own voice.
Yeah, and present company excluded, obviously.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Okay, so AJ, let's get into it. There was a very thorough explanation of the archetypes, and so let's dig in here. So do you want to start now that we've established the archetypes? You want me to give you the survivor and match the archetype, or archetype and we'll bring out the survivor?
Let's archetype it up, because I have a pecking order of where, who has the best chance of winning and who has the worst chance of winning. So if I work from bottom up, I think we can run through it 12-1.
Okay, so does that mean you're going to give me a survivor at number 12?
No, I will. I'll give you the archetype, and then we'll find the survivor.
Okay, here we go.
And I will say this was really difficult this season, primarily because I think they voted off the wrong person when they voted off Matt. And if Juliet stuck around here, she would have clearly been fresh meat, and we would have had a lot. Different things would have fallen a lot differently, I think.
So, AJ, in addition to archetypes, you're giving us power rankings as well?
I am.
Okay. All right, let's kick it off.
This doesn't mean my number one person is definitely going to win, because as we've said, the marriage of convenience tends to go to the end. But it just means that if these people, when you see the three people who are left, if we go to a three, the one who's highest up on these rankings is probably going to win. Generally speaking, the top three aren't going to let the top three make it to the end.
Okay. So let's go ahead and kick us off with number 12.
Number 12 is fresh meat.
Okay.
As you probably guess. And fresh meat probably doesn't have a clue as to where to go. Now, I wasn't going to have this person as fresh meat at the beginning of the season, but at this point, Sherry is fresh meat.
Oh.
And the reason
now, is this because she owns a Taco Bell?
Yes, exactly.
Just kidding. Obviously,
because Sherry, she played her shamar card so early, and she has not had any strategy in this game since. She's looked lost.
Oh, I was going to say that obviously, it's not. Sherry is not fresh meat because she owns a Taco Bell, because obviously there's no fresh meat at Taco Bell.
But they have Doritos.
Just kidding. Just kidding.
They have Doritos.
That's true.
And Cool Ranch Doritos.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you for my stupid joke.
No, that's okay. I think she had all her eggs in the Shamar basket, her little blindside alliance, as I like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she looks like Sandra Bullock, and he's a big guy.
Yeah.
Could be a football player. It's a blindside alliance. It works for Survivor.
Yes.
I think she's fresh meat. I don't think she's going to offer anything up in way of strategy from this point forward. I mean, she's just numbers. She's cannon fodder. She's probably the next to go. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a lot there.
Yeah, it's probably, you know, the lack of a better archetype for her, because, I mean, she does seem to know the game. I mean, she's not somebody who has no idea what they're doing.
She does, but I think losing that strategy early, I think she's kind of given up. And I think you could see that she's just kind of like hoping to be dragged along at this point, and that puts her in fresh meat category.
She's been pretty invisible since Shamar left the game.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think she was going to be this when we got to 12, but of the 12, I mean, and part of this is a function of the fact that we have, you know, 8 returning players who can't be fresh meat. They've been here before.
Right.
That automatically disqualifies them. Number 11 would be the ninja.
Okay.
And this is the invisible edit, and I don't think there's any more invisible edit than Brenda.
Where the heck is Brenda?
I mean, except for her dancing last week, celebrating, and she didn't even participate in the challenge. It's like, yeah, I'll sit down.
Yeah. Now, ironically, Brenda is the only person on the show with actual experience as a cheerleader. ironically, she is not the cheerleader this season as a former Miami Dolphins cheerleader, and we won't hold that against her.
No, we won't. No, we won't. Number 10 is the cheerleader. And again, the cheerleader who
well, hold on. Let's not skip totally over Brenda. We'll talk a little bit about Brenda. Now, what do you think is the deal with Brenda? I talked to Marty Piombo, who obviously played with Brenda on Survivor Nicaragua, and we talked about a few different theories of, is she just not doing anything this time? Is she doing stuff and we're just not seeing it? Was it really Sash that was doing everything the last time? What's your take? Why aren't we seeing so much Brenda?
You know, I really think that she's more of a calculating type player when it comes to strategy. And you have such personalities on the favorites. I mean, how can you spend any time with someone who's going to just let the bigger personalities play themselves out when you have a Philip and a Brandon screaming at each other left and right and causing all this mayhem and you know, Cochran's, you know, with the bon mots here left and right in the confessionals. It's like the edit is invisible because she's just not as entertaining as the other people in her tribe. I think if she were on the fans tribe, given, you know, and away from this craziness, I think we probably see a lot more of her strategy and behind the scenes stuff. I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt that she has it. I just think it's she's not interesting in terms of this group.
But in your power rankings, 11 is very low. Do you feel like she has the 11th best chance to win this season?
Oh, I think she can't win this season. I really don't. I think part of it is also the fact that the ninja gets the invisible edit. And I think it's kind of that that function of editing telling you that this person doesn't have a chance to win. I mean, they know who's in the finals, and I don't think they'd let someone go this long without being noticed if they were truly going to be a power player in the game. I think that's a function of it. It's not necessarily that she's to blame for this, but I think the editors have deemed her the ninja, which to me means she probably isn't the winner.
Okay, well, I agree with that. I mean, if I was just watching things, if this was Big Brother and we were watching things as they unfold, I would not say that Brenda has the 11th best chance to win, but you are absolutely correct. If she was the winner, you would think that she would not be this invisible. The only thing I will say is that there have been players who have had a strong second half, where if you watch the first half of Survivor One World, Kim was rather invisible in the first half of Survivor One World. And then it wasn't until after Colton was gone until they really started to become the Kim show. So we'll see, but it does not look good for Brenda right now.
Well, like, you know, as we've seen in the NCAA tournament, sometimes a 15 seed pulls an upset.
Okay.
But it would have to be a run of upsets.
Yeah. Are you caught up in the March Madness too?
Oh yeah. Oh my God. I went to Syracuse, and so we are final eighting. So it's good times.
Good times. All right. So give us number 10.
Number 10 is the cheerleader.
Yes.
And the cheerleader.
Now, I think, is this a cheerleader who has already been a cheerleader in these power rankings?
Why, yes. Yes, it has, funnily enough. I think Dawn is playing the same game.
Yeah.
I think Dawn is still Dawn, and she's just, I mean, you can see the look of concern on her face when they come back from a challenge and people are fighting, and she's just like, guys, why can't we get along? And she's willing to talk to the people, the downtrodden people who are about to be voted off, and lend them an ear, even if she's going to then, you know, go running to Philip and expose them. But she still seems so genuine I just don't want you to feel bad about this. And why can't we all just be friends? She's a cheerleader. And in the end, she's not going – I still don't think she's ruthless enough to be the one to flip on mm-hmm. her alliance. I think she's got to be drag kicking and screaming into that.
Well, I feel like Dawn is very low here on the power rankings. And just from I could see that we've got that. This means that Eddie and Reynold and Eric Reichenbach and all these people are ahead of Dawn in the alliance or in the power rankings. I don't know. I feel like Dawn is low in the power rankings to me.
Well, let's see how it all plays out. Let's see the whole grid.
All right, let's see the whole board.
But certainly, the Bro-Alliance.
So reading between the lines, you are very bullish on the Bro-Alliance. I see it. So on your electoral map, I see you have a lot of states going Bro-Alliance here in the end game. Okay.
Exactly. I blame Ron Paul.
Yeah. Okay.
Number 9 is the Loose Cannon.
Yes. You're the Nate Silver prognostication of the second half of Survivor.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
The Loose Cannon, and the reason the Loose Cannon tends to be higher up than a cheerleader is for the fact that the Loose Cannon, in general terms, is that person who you bring along because they can't possibly win, but we want them in the end, sit next to us in the end because they can't possibly win. They have probably, pissed off the most people along the way. And even though there were a lot of candidates for Loose Cannon mm-hmm. in this season, I mean, I think they stacked the decks here and just loaded us with a lot of Loose Cannons because that's the favorites they brought back. I'm giving Corinne the honor of Loose Cannon.
I think that's right. I think that there's a lot of categories that the specialists can fall into, and I think that Corinne is probably the best for Loose Cannon.
Yeah, and I think as you start pushing her buttons more and more and telling her that, you know, why don't you just walk away over there? Like, okay. You know, we all know that she's probably the first one who's going to stab someone in the back here because she's just had enough.
She's had enough, yeah. It's more – she just has a very low tolerance for annoyance.
Exactly.
Yes.
And in that sense, she's Loose Cannon. I don't think she's going to, cold cock anybody.
Yeah. the way that Corinne acts around Philip is generally the response I get from my wife anytime I talk to her. It's pretty
Indeed.
Much, oh, God, he's so annoying.
Another podcast?
Yeah, I can't take it anymore. All right.
I'm only going to be on one a week, not seven.
Yeah. Number 8.
Number 8 is the narcissist, and you know, the narcissist is someone who is in love with their own ideas, and as such, eventually they're not as open to the long view.
Okay, is this person who's the narcissist? Are they in love with themselves physically?
That is typically they sometimes they're in love with their own brain. But generally speaking, they might be someone who considers themselves one of the most beautiful people in the game, who align themselves with clearly the most beautiful people in the game. And gosh, I'm handsome and beautiful. And isn't that enough?
Yes. Okay. So we can tell that you are going with Eddie as the narcissist.
Yes, indeed. Was it that obvious? Sometimes they write themselves.
So yes, Eddie, the narcissist, who is at a balmy number 8 for a guy that we haven't seen too much from, other than ranking everybody's looks.
Indeed.
Yes, and he would certainly be at number 1 of the best looking power rankings as seen by Eddie.
Yes, when gazing in one's own mirror. Indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
Number 7 is Old Reliable.
Yes.
And again, someone who you might want to take along for a very long – usually the fifth person in a five-prong alliance ends up being their old reliable, because it usually becomes these two sets of two and the one you bring in because you both twos trust the person. And the old reliable here – actually, Corinne would be happy to hear who old reliable is.
Yeah.
Because it's Michael.
Michael.
Yeah. Her gee.
She loves him. She loves him. And it's very, and it's neat to have him around.
Yeah, but I mean, he's done very well in the challenges. He's represented himself well. And, you know, he seems to be just someone who is very trustworthy and someone who's just, you know, hey, as long as it's me for another 3 days, I'm with you, you know. And I think that's kind of why he was one of the three fans in that group who survived the last two tribal councils, is because he was the one who was seen as the least threatening in terms of going rogue. And that makes him reliable.
Do you think that the other players are sleeping on Michael a bit? I mean, I know from his bio ahead of time that they asked him, what players are you going to play the game like? And he said that the players that I'm going to play like are Rob Cesternino and Suri. Now, both of those players had, at least in their first seasons, a lot of people felt the same way as you're describing Michael, and then a lot of those players who played with myself and Suri were surprised when we started making a lot of moves after the merge in our games. Do you think that Michael could have a similar fate?
I think so. I think especially when the merge happens and he's not clearly outnumbered to such an obvious extent. I mean, you know, when it's the numbers are that much against you, and there's no way that the favorites were going to turn on each other. You know, they went 1, 2, 3. I actually probably, if I were playing the game and it had been Matt, Michael, and Julia, I would have gotten rid of Michael first.
I agree,
because I do think he's harder to read, and. There does seem to me to be something working beneath the surface there that, you know, that was a little more unpredictable. And yeah, they could very well be sleeping on him, or he could just, you know, be the next to go. Because one fan's got to go if Stealth R Us is to maintain their power.
Yes. All right. Number six, top half.
Well, number six, we're actually going to skip number six for a moment.
Whoa.
Because number six is the second half of the Marriage of Convenience. And again, it's just because, generally speaking, they either get the zero votes, as you said, or they're cut loose at four. So they have a really hard time winning if they don't get to the final tribal council at all, or if, you know, they're there with their partner in crime, who tends to be the one who gets 7 to 9 votes. So they would finish at six, but I don't want to reveal who is the other partner in the marriage, so we'll hold off until we get there.
Okay. So,
yes.
What is next?
Number five is Idiot Savant.
Okay. Idiot Savant. Okay. Take your pick.
And the Idiot Savant is someone who's possibly very gullible.
Have they
might be manipulated into I don't know, say handing over an immunity idol when there's no real reason to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, someone who likes ice cream.
Yes. So Cochran.
Not vanilla ice cream.
Oh.
Yeah, no, obviously we're talking Eric here.
Yes. Okay.
You know, it's just they're not someone who anyone in the game is going to be afraid of making moves on their own. He happens to be very perceptive, but he seems to know exactly what's going on, but there's that disconnect between this knowledge and the actions that he takes. And it's almost like he's the Idiot Savant in reverse, because he is aware, but doesn't know how to bring that into something that's going to help him. You know, generally speaking, the Idiot Savant is someone who's not aware and yet seems to make all the right moves.
Well, he's the silent one.
Yeah, maybe he's the Savant Idiot. I don't know. But he's definitely someone who I could see definitely, you know, going a long way, because people are going to want him in their alliance. I think every alliance wants him in it, because they don't see him as someone who's going to suddenly put all the pieces together. And I think that makes him very appealing to lasting longer.
Okay, number four.
Number four is the X factor, the someone who is different,
yes.
Someone who stands out from the rest of the people in their alliance or in their tribe. And also is very knowledgeable about the game, usually, on top of that. And I think in this case, we're talking Andrea.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think that wasn't. I felt like in the introductions, I felt like you were leading me to Cochran with the double X factor.
Well, and
you faked us out.
And he was in his first season. He definitely was in his first season. But I think because we are dealing with so many people who have played the game before, that Cochran is no longer unique in that regard, as far as being through it. And I think because Andrea has been in this very situation before of being in an alliance that was running the show and getting betrayed and getting, you know, bamboozled.
Yes.
I think she's very aware of that not happening again. And I think that puts her in a position where nobody else is, because I don't think anybody else in this alliance has been as successful for the same amount of time and is fully on guard for this to happen. And, you know, you saw a little bit of this last week when she's like, you know, saying like, you know what, I'm going to start making friends with these fans and I'm going to make sure as many people like me as possible just in case. And I don't think anyone else has a just in case.
Well, how about Philip, who was in that same alliance that Andrea was in on Redemption Island?
But he doesn't think that he is possibly going to be betrayed. He thinks he's Boston Rob.
Okay.
He doesn't, that doesn't make him different from everyone else. That makes him insane. But I mean, clearly he's different from everybody else, but a completely different way.
Yeah.
But he hasn't learned from last time.
Yeah.
He's still just as delusional as last time. He's playing the same game. He just thinks he's playing a different game, and that there's no difference there.
Okay, all right. So
everyone knows it.
All right. So we still have six left, and then 3, 2, and 1.
We have three left.
Well, and six, who was TBD.
Oh, and six. Yes, absolutely. So number three is the mad scientist.
Mad scientist, okay.
Mad scientist, generally they're their own worst enemies, I think, especially when it comes time to getting to the final tribal, because they've probably screwed over so many people, it's really hard at this point to be able to win over enough people to win the game. But, you know, they can very easily make it to the final. It's just their tactics in getting there probably are going to bite them. And this season, I mean, Philip is the mad scientist.
Of course.
He cannot help himself from plotting and strategizing and bringing in his double agent and creating his, no, you know, you're not in the group. Come on in here. I have to look to you. But, someone is going to tell you to do something, and I want you to do it without telling them that I told you or without telling me that they told you. And what the hell? What the hell? And, you know, he didn't need a secret double agent in Julia, but he's working it. He's working it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness! He can't help himself. This delusion that he threw a challenge. I meant to do that, and I'm going to tell you all about it. It's like, just be quiet, lay low, and let's vote out a fan and just move on to the next challenge. It's like, stop it,
AJ. What would your Stealth R Us nickname be?
yeah, the calculator.
very good. I like that.
I would be the calculator.
Yeah, so but you still have Philip in that top three.
Yeah, and it's pretty much for the same reason as last time. I mean, why wouldn't you want to go up with Philip in the end? I mean, we've hit that point where I think that if he doesn't get voted out in the next two tribals simply because the annoyance factor has gotten to the point where it's like, all right, we're done. You have to take him to the end because no one expects him to win, and he won't win unless he does the exact same thing I said he had to do the last time, which is just, you know, be normal and be sane and say, ha ha, I fooled you. But we all know that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if you just go there and say, hey, I was playing this character and I knew if I had the crazier I acted that you know, the more I'd be here and see, I have Boston Rob, ha ha. But no, he's not capable of that.
Yeah, that still is the thing that I find so curious about Philip from that final tribal council on Survivor Redemption Island, was that he did not you know, he even implied, like, during the games, like, well, I've got something up my sleeve for the Final Tribal Council, but it was just more of the same at the Final Tribal Council.
Right. And he would, and I think he had a shot at winning had if he had gone in there, and I think everyone would have looked at him and gone, wow, he played us. I think they would have respected that, but that it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, clearly he's the mad scientist this season. I mean, the man cannot turn off the strategy.
Yeah. Had Philip at that first tribal council say, look, I did everything I did, you know, while Boston Rob was tricking you, I'm the only one. I tricked Boston Rob. I got him to take me to this point. And he thought, and I got on your nerves. And for that, I'm sorry. But it was really all so Rob would keep me around so I could trick him. And if you really want to stick it to Boston Rob, give me the money. But that wasn't that wasn't his thesis that day.
No. No, he was taking the course pass fail, and well, he didn't pass.
I think he told off a couple of people too on the jury.
Yeah, that's probably not the best strategy. Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, it's also like Russell, where basically the jury is saying, if you apologize to us right now, I will vote for you. I ain't apologizing. Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. I think there's a fine line. You don't want to, you know, come off as, you know, wishy-washy to the jury, because that's always the kiss of death. But I think you want to say, look, I did what I had to do. You don't want to say, like, hey, you don't want to vote for me? Well, then F you. I think this is like some middle ground. Like, look, I don't apologize for playing the game. You know, I came here and you guys were all great players, and I did what I had to do because that was the only way I could beat you guys, because you guys are great. And
Sandra did that twice, and yeah, she won twice. That's the Diaz twine right there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, I'm sorry that things got so heated. You know, but you can't say, look, well, everything I did, you know, I feel like I played the game with integrity. I know at times I didn't play it as much with integrity, but it was my intention to play with integrity. I think that's where you start to lose the jury.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. So yeah, interesting final three here. Now, in the power rankings, we have number one, number two, and number six available. And I'm looking at my board here, and I see still on the board are Cochran, Malcolm, and Reynolds, of all people.
Exactly. Who would have thunk it?
All right. So I'm very curious to see where you're going with this.
All right. Well, number two is our second member of our marriage. So two and six are the marriage.
Okay.
And like I said, the reason that number two is the marriage, the only reason they're number two is because sometimes we're not entirely sure where that power is going to flip within the couple. You know, because I would have had Malcolm over Denise last season, but Denise pulled the rug out from under him by necessity. But, you know, she ended up winning. So she was really number six, even though someone in the marriage won. So that's the only reason the marriage, because they're relying on somebody else to help them seal the deal. They can't be number one. They're number two. But it's a great position to be in. And the marriage number one, as I see it, who's holding most of the cards in this game right now, is Malcolm.
Malcolm.
Absolutely. And he, I mean, he came in with such an advantage to begin with that no one had seen his season. So he was like a fan playing on the favorites. He's almost an X factor in that regard. But I mean, he's in an alliance. He's in an alliance, and he's formed this other alliance with somebody who needed to do it or they'd be voted out of the game. And that gives Malcolm the power in this. He knows that Reynolds has that idol, and nobody knows he has one, you know, outside of Corinne. I mean, you know, he's been able to keep it under wraps. No one's been doing his laundry this season. So, I mean, he's just in a perfect position right now to manipulate everybody as he sees fit. He can choose to, turn heel on Stealth or us, or he can ride it out. But I mean, he is so positioned himself to where he's holding all the cards that you know, he's got Reynolds and Eddie like eating out of the palm of his hands because they were looking for a savior, and he handed them a lifeline, and you know, is a great position to be in.
Yeah, Malcolm is in a phenomenal spot. He's been the one person to sort of, you know, he's got the Stealth R Us thing going on. He's also got the other, you know, the Bro Alliance thing going on. He's really the only guy in the center of that Venn diagram being able to work with the most number of people. And I think that's usually a good thing come merge time.
Absolutely. Because he's so good at challenges too, I mean, it's hard for me to see a scenario where they catch on. It's going to take a lot to blindside this guy.
Okay, so by proxy, does that make the other person in the marriage of convenience Reynolds?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and so are we assigning another archetype to Reynolds?
He's marriage too. I mean, okay. You know, he could certainly fit in with the narcissist crowd. No doubt about it. He doesn't think anybody could possibly find as many immunity idols as he has, even though we all know that's not the case.
Yes. Okay. And,
but no, he's married too. And part of it is because he wouldn't be in this game for much longer if not for the fact that someone as strong as Malcolm has reached out to him. And he's clearly the subservient one of the two because he was just willing, anything. You know, I have an idol. So,
okay.
You know, he's playing with face-up cards.
All right, so that only leaves Cochran, and now so we slot Cochran back down at number 6.
No.
Oh.
The diplomat is number 1.
Oh. Okay. So Malcolm was 2,
yeah.
And you have Reynolds at 6. Cochran's at 1. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
And I'm not saying that I think Cochran has a better chance to win the game than Malcolm. It's just that Malcolm's game at this point does rely on a lot of other people. When you put yourself in the marriage, he's relying on Reynolds not to, you know, turn heel on him like next week or tell everybody what's going on. He's relying on somebody else to like be his pawn. So that's the reason that Malcolm is lower on our power rankings, even though I think Malcolm's probably in the best position to win. But the person who always has the best chance of making it to the final tribal, at which point they got to argue for it, and we all know Cochran can argue. You know, it's Cochran. He's the diplomat this season. He is. First of all, he's Philip's confidant.
Mm-hmm.
For some unknown reason, I don't know why Philip decided that he was going to be the confidant, but he's Philip's confidant. But he's also Don's confidant, and he's the one who's going to try. He's often the one who's trying to smooth things out with, you know, Corinne, Philip, come on, guys.
I think that's
calm
a good call. Man. I like Cochran as the diplomat.
I mean, he's the voice of reason there. He may not be the one who's suggesting the plan of who they should vote off, even, but he's willing to take all the ideas and say, okay, you say this, you say this. Is this really the best idea? He's the diplomat, a politician. He's getting his point of view across without having to get any blood on his hands. I mean, he's really doing a great job, and he also understands what it's like to be a fan, having been, you know, in that situation of being a super fan coming to the show. I mean, he can reach out to the fans too, come merge and understand what it's like to be there and like, oh my gosh, I'm here. And he knows where they've been. I think he's very calm this season. He's not as frantic and worried about being a pivotal vote when the time comes. And he's just playing a really smart, smart game. And I can see him. I can see him going to the final tribal.
I think he's positioned well too. Although I don't think we've seen Cochran really have a relationship with the fan, at least on screen. Michael has been much tighter with Corinne. Cochran, did not seem to be getting along too hot with Julia from his monologue about her being so bland. And then over with Eddie and Reynolds, I don't see him striking up too much of a relationship with those guys. So I think Cochran's best bet lies with the favorites staying charge, and this Bro Alliance could be very tough for Cochran to get around.
Yeah, but I also think he's not someone who's going to be so locked into this alliance that if the time comes and, you know, Corinne comes to him and says, look, you know, we need to get Philip out right now, and yeah. You know, he can, you know, maybe a few tribals down the line and he can say, all right, yeah, I can talk to Reynolds and Eddie and Eric and make sure that we have the numbers so that it's not one of these ridiculous things where he suddenly plays an idol and, you know, we're screwed. You know, I think he's able to see the whole picture and all the pieces on the chessboard. And he's able to talk. I think he's got the verbal skills where he can convince people who might not even know that he doesn't like them into voting his way.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, because if I was going to do this breakdown, all these archetypes, I think I would have Cochrane and Dawn as the marriage of convenience, because all season long, going back to the first episode, every vote is, okay, what are Cochrane and Dawn doing? What are Cochrane and Dawn doing? Why not Cochrane and Dawn as the marriage of convenience?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people who could fit into different categories. I mean, this is really one of the only ones where you get all 12 slotted in. And I think that matters. I think that, you know, Philip could certainly be the loose cannon if you wanted to look at him that way. He could also be the you know, the X Factor, because he's cuckoo and certainly different from everybody else.
Yes.
And you could also consider him to be the idiot savant if you wanted, because, you know, his plans shouldn't be working, because who believes him? And yet here he is in charge, quote unquote, of the whole thing. I think you can put people into different archetypes, but it really isn't until you put the whole picture together and find out where the pieces go. And I really do like the fact that Malcolm and Reynolds is a marriage of convenience. It's not an alliance that they decided on day one, which it often turns into, where it's like, okay, we are going to be together come hell or high water. This is an alliance. Malcolm and Denise kind of was a marriage of convenience, because they were kind of like stuck together because they were the only ones in their tribe to survive. You know, when it got down to 12, like, they kind of had only each other. And that's why Malcolm and Denise was a marriage of convenience. This one is like Malcolm and Reynolds needs Malcolm or else he's gone. You know, and that's why he agreed to this deal. And I think this alliance could work, and it is a marriage of convenience.
Okay. All right. So Survivor shaping up for a good second half, unlike our Mets.
The last couple of years. Yeah, I think you and I might be in the rotation by May.
Well. all right, so big second half coming for Survivor Caramel. And you want to hit on some other shows a little bit real quick? I know you said you're watching The Amazing Race this season. I think this has been an interesting season of the race, in that it doesn't seem like we have any teams that are really standouts as far as super strong teams.
No, I mean, anytime you have a team with a racer running on one leg,
who's winning?
He's skiing on one ski. yeah, anytime you have that happen and they end up winning, there doesn't speak volumes to the ability of the rest of the pack. You know, it's entertaining though this season. It's been entertaining for me. I think there's the personalities for me is what makes the show exciting. I don't really care who wins usually, as long as it's not someone who's just being blatantly lucky and fallen into things, you know, as long as there's some sort of communication with their partner and they're not Victoria, you know, like someone who I hate like that, you know, it's like that this season doesn't have anyone I really, really hate.
Anybody you really, really like though?
I like the YouTubers.
Okay.
I really do. Joey seems to be having just so much fun. And that how can you not get swept up in the fun, you know, factor? That to me is just entertaining. I mean, there's not a lot of strategy going on this year. You know, these mock alliances, they're not really alliances, because in the end, you know, if someone gets the bad taxi driver, there goes your alliance. But, you know, I like it. I like the challenges. I think it's fun. The show works for me when it's fun. And there isn't a lot of, you know, bickering going around. It's just have fun at the challenges and you know, see who picks the right challenge. I like that when you get the this or that, and you know, when everyone picks this and only one person picks that, you know, you're just like, okay, you're an idiot.
See, I like the drama. My favorite season was with Brendan and Rachel, where they had all of the fighting going on with every week. I feel like that adds something to it for me.
I was just so over Brenchel at that point. I mean, how many?
How dare you, AJ?
Look, nobody gets between me and my reality show. I just had too much of it. Too many seasons in a row. You can bring back Zingbot as many times as you want. Never going to get old for me. If she's in the house again, you can bring Jesse back every time Big Brother house. Never going to get old for me. It's just, it's such a joke at this point. You kind of have to keep the running gag going, but I take a step back. Enjoy being married for a while.
I just loved it when in that season when Rachel is like crying and she said, I thought The Amazing Race is supposed to be fun and good.
Oh, I can't shake my head.
Yeah, that was good. That was a fun moment. All right, what about the Big Brother Canada? Now, you are such a big reality TV fan. You're actually looking at Big Brother Canada in it with all of the things that you have going on right now. What is your take on Big Brother Canada?
I love Big Brother Canada. I think they're doing such a great job. They're having so much fun with it. I mean, it's distinctly Canadian. You know, they didn't just rip off the U.S. version completely. Obviously, there's beats to it, but there's a Canadian flavor to it. I love that, you know, every time they vote for a head of household.
Yes.
Head of household. I think that's great. It's just, you know, and every so often, what's it all about? It's just fun. I love Marsha the Moose.
Yes, Marsha the Moose has been good.
Oh, Rob. So good to see you again. I'm so happy to be here. I got a little assignment for you, Rob.
Marsha, I would love to take you up on this assignment, but... it's been Marsha Moose has been very good. Did you like it when Marsha Moose came back with AJ this week?
Well, AJ feels that Marsha the Moose is very good, and AJ feels that AJ coming back. Oh my god! If I start third personing myself while talking about AJ third personing himself,
yeah,
is that like the sixth person? Oh my gosh, my head will explode. I liked it. I think it's fun. I think that's the kind of fun thing. I like the fun little twists of, like, you know, having this innocuous seeming, like, you know, pinata party and there's something in the pinata. It's not as hit yourself on the head with the hammer that something important is going to happen now. I like that they're doing that sort of stuff. I like the fact that the live show, it seems to be they let it breathe a lot more. Are they not actually doing it live?
I think it's they tape it like a few hours beforehand.
Yeah, I think I like that so much better than doing it live and trying to squeeze it in and hoping everything goes right. I think they can give it room to breathe. They know exactly just how much they do have to edit off of it. Do it plausibly live, and that's fine. Do it like an hour or two before, but it just seems to breathe a lot more. And they seem to be having fun. Even with all the sniping and all the stuff that's going on, the house seems to be having a genuinely good time. I think casting did a really great job of picking, for the most part, players who are doing strategy. And it's fun because I don't know who's going to win at this point. I have an idea, but I think they're surprising me with who they're voting off. And there's reasons behind it. And they seem to all be thinking. And I like it a lot.
Who are your favorites on Big Brother Canada?
I like the combo Dr. Will, Dan Giesling, Peter.
Yes.
I love him. I wish he'd tone it down a little bit. But you know, just even the fact that they were able to, him and Alec were able to, you know, kind of like joke about that in their confessional. I think it's the spirit that they're – I like Peter a lot. I like Gary a lot. I think Topaz is playing a very good game. I think she's in a position of power right now. Not just because she's HOH, but I think she's in a great position right now to win this whole thing. If I were her for this week's, not knowing, I don't watch the live feed, so no spoilers here.
Okay.
Just from what's been on the shows. I mean, if I were her, I would definitely use this opportunity to backdoor someone. And I would put up Jillian this week, and I'd put up Tala and let them know that I'm gonna backdoor somebody.
Yeah,
and I would try and get Peter out of the house this week.
Whoa,
I mean, because you don't want Emmett to be involved in the competition. And Gary's got that pass that he can pull Emmett off, I guess, if he gets pulled. So I mean, she's got that secret wedding with Gary. Tell him, you know, pull Emmett off, and you know, so he doesn't save Jillian and screw this up. But Jillian, you know, put Jillian in against Peter and get Peter out of the house because that gives her a victory, I think.
I really like the dynamic of the crumbling showmance between Alec and Topaz, because I don't really ever think we've ever had a showmance go together for a while and then break up on one of these shows. It's usually, you know, showmance gets a boy meets girl, boy and girl fall in love, boy and girl, you know, throw strategy to the wind and are going to fall in love and live happily ever after. We rarely see on one of these shows, boy meets girl, boy and girl get together for 3 or 4 weeks, decide, eh, this really isn't working out, and stay in the house together.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating, and they're both so aware of it, and they're both so aware that they're playing each other at this point.
Yeah, I think it's interesting sort of like Mr. and Mrs. Smith vibe, because I think that Topaz is in the position, but, well, you know, I have what Alec wants me to do, but then I have what Gary wants me to do. And honestly, I think what the guy who I'm not dating right now is telling me stuff that's better for me than what the guy who is dating me is telling me to do.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And the thing is that the Shield was so well put. They were so well put together. The Cabal strategy. If I were going to play one of these games, I would use the Cabal strategy. And I actually referenced the Cabal strategy in my book.
What is the Cabal strategy?
Well, the Cabal strategy is basically where you go to another player. I actually use the example in my book of Supreme Court justices possibly doing this, but you go to another player and say, all right, we're a team, we're in this from start to finish. And it's someone that you just connect with, someone you like from day one, and you just say, why don't we give this a go? We'll agree to discuss every vote together, and between us, we'll decide who goes home.
Marriage of convenience.
Marriage of convenience. But you take that twosome and you bring in a third person and get them on board and say, okay, the three of us work together and we're going to vote together, but you don't tell them about the original two. So mm-hmm. The third person has no power in this, because it doesn't matter what they say, because you know the two of you are voting together.
This sounds a lot like the BR rules.
It's a little like the BR rules, except BR is never sharing this with anybody. So I mean, it's almost what they did with the Quattro is where, because then you eventually build that three, you take those three and you go to five,
yeah,
by pulling in another couple who then say, you know, it doesn't matter if those two vote together because you've got the three as a majority, and that three majority is really just the Shield. So you know, by pulling in Topaz as the showmance, you had three. By pulling in the Quattro, that you know Tom and Emmett, you had five, and by pulling in their little showmans, cuddlemances, whatever, you know, you build it where it doesn't matter because, you know, whatever Tom says and Emmett says, well, they're going to say, and if they've agreed to say whatever you say, I mean, it was really great building this cabal where you don't have any blood on your hands because you have a majority that doesn't realize that you're pulling all the strings. And they had it until they had the double eviction and kicked Tom and Liza out of the house. They had this working and they could have run that all the way to the final. It was no one was on to them even. Until Suzette started raising her flags and Gary kind of like started sniffing it out. Mm-hmm. But I think they could have if they had evicted Gary, I think they definitely could have definitely run the whole house, because you had enough people who weren't interested in playing the game, like Suzette and Tala and AJ, that I think they could have gotten away with it.
All right, it's a perfect storm of reality TV out there, and AJ, I hope you found shelter in the storm for a little bit here today.
I did. I actually won a tarp during one of the first reward challenges, so I have that up, and I've been pretty safe. I'm not going to go psycho here.
All right, for our fantasy baseball players out there, can you give us one guy that, to borrow a Christopher Harris term, that you are planting your flag on this year? One guy that is a good player that you think is going to be especially good, and one guy that everybody is maybe sleeping on.
Okay, well, I mean, I have a few sleepers. Yeah, I have a few sleepers that I've been pimping all season. I think Billy Butler from the Kansas City Royals at first base is someone who's going to have a top five season at his position. I think I would not use my first round picks on someone like a Robinson Cano or Troy Tulowitzki. I'd let second and short go for a while. And I'd go with some lesser players who I think are going to have some surprisingly good seasons, like a Jose Altuve from Houston and a Starlin Castro on the Cubs. In pitching, I really like Madison Bumgarner of the Giants to possibly even win a Cy Young Award. At catcher, I really like Willian Rosario of the Colorado Rockies to have a pretty good season. I mean, in terms of at the tippy top, I'm picking Mike Trout number one. I wrote an entire article on how historic Mike Trout's season was last year. So even the odds of Mike Trout having had his season last year are so infinitesimally small that even if he regresses by half, he still would have one of the best 15 seasons in all of baseball history this year. That's how good his season was last year. And by far and away, he's the number one player in the game right now.
Okay. That's a little tidbit for anybody that made it this far along into the podcast. Get us some sleepers and some good advice from AJ Mass.
Some sleepers like Topaz is a
sleeper. Topaz, there you go. Yeah, Topaz is a great sleeper in your fantasy Big Brother Canada league. Topaz, please take off your headphones.
Oh my gosh, glitter!
All right, well, AJ, thank you so much. And all right, how many wins for the Mets this year?
I wish I could be more optimistic.
Are the Mets really tanking the season? Tell me, I'm not opposed to it if they are.
No, they're not tanking the season. This isn't the NFL. Draft picks are not that big.
No, I recently read the extra 2%, and I felt like that's what they were saying that the Rays did in 2007, that they said, well, they knew that they would win so many teams, but they figured, why spend the money this year when if they get a better pick, it's better for them to not go all in and try to only win a few more games in 2007.
No, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see like an April of what they head north with, and then you know they'll see where they are after a month, and they'll probably bring up Zach Wheeler at that point to join the rotation, and Darnold won't be too far behind. They have such a young pitching staff; they don't want to bring up the rookie catcher right now. And start the arbitration clock on him. So I think by come like the end of May, you're going to get Wheeler up here and Darnold, and you know they'll see what their outfield can produce right now. I think they have a pretty good infield, pretty good bullpen. It's just a question of they have so many injuries on the starting pitching staff. I mean that's going to hurt them and make them uncompetitive. And you know they're just trying to get through this season period. Get the young pitchers a little experience, and next year, when a little bit more of this Madoff scandal money comes back to them, and they get people like Bobby Bonilla off the books.
No, that's never happening.
Oh, Lordy. But yeah, they'll have a little bit more money next. They will have a little bit more money next year, and they can go after a couple of free agent outfielders to fill this.
It's more the gap. Santana and the Jason Bay money that's going to come off the books next year.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I mean, they'll have a lot more money to spend on free agent outfielders next year. So I mean, the infield looks okay. It's not that bad. And, you know, I think I could hit 40 if everything goes well, if he can hit more at home, and, you know, Wright will hit his 30 and Steele his 30. And, you know, if Lucas Duda hits 25, then they'll win some games. I mean, I'm not expecting more than 72.
Okay.
I'd be happy with 72. I mean, you know, you never know things. They're in a tough division with a lot of good pitching. So if the outfield, a guy like a Colin Cowgill surprises and suddenly turns into something, you know, who knows? Maybe they can finish 500. But I mean, playoffs is probably not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, let's not kill ourselves to try to win a few more games when, you know, maybe we can get find our own Bryce Harper along the way.
You know what I say? It doesn't matter if you win or lose as long as the mascot survives.
That's right. All right. And all right. So follow AJ Mass on Twitter at AJ Mass. If you want to pick up your own copy of How Fantasy Sports Explains the World, go to robhasawebsite.com/AJ Mass, and it's too early for the second book, right?
It's too early for the second book. The How Fantasy Sports Explains the World is now also available from audible.com.
Whoa.
In the audio format. I did not read it, but it is available there. It also will be coming out in paperback in July. You can pre-order that now on Amazon. The second book, actually, I am finishing off the final edits this weekend. It is, funnily enough, due on April 1st to my publisher for release next April. But it will be called Yes, It's Hot in Here. And it's all about the wild and wacky, weird world of the professional mascot, a position I held for 4 years with the New York Mets myself. And it's been a fun journey. I spent this past year working my way back into the costume one more time, performing some wacky mascot antics in several stadiums around the country. 15 years after my last visit inside the costume. So it's been a wild journey that is actually coming to an end this weekend as I cross those T's and dot those I's and make sure my spell check runs through.
All right. Well, AJ, we look forward to it. Have a great weekend. Congrats on finishing the second book. I'm sure it is not an easy thing to do. And, you know, and let's see how these power rankings play out.
We shall see. And remember, they're odds of success, not a guarantee. Please, folks, no wagering.
Yes. All right. Thank you very much, AJ.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right. Take care. All right, everybody. There you have it. That was AJ Mass from ESPN. Very good friend of the podcast. And we'll see about these power rankings. I think if I was going to do my power rankings, I think I might have had it a little bit different. I think it's tough to have Cochran and Malcolm 1-2 the more I think about it. I think that you kind of have to pick one or the other. It's either Cochran is going to do well and Malcolm's not going to be there, or Malcolm is going to do well and Cochran's not going to be there. So I think it's sort of like I think there's a problem with this bracket as the power rankings. But it is going to be very exciting to see how exactly the second half of Survivor plays out. We hope. Knocking on wood. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of Rob Has a Podcast. We are going to be back on Sunday night. Amazing Race cast. We'll talk with Jessica Lees, our Amazing Race correspondent, about everything that went on the Amazing Race on the next leg. And then we're going to talk then Celebrity Apprentice. We're going to check in with Mario Lanza, who we've done a Celebrity Apprentice podcast with before, who is always very funny, naturally on April Fool's Day. But that's no joke, everybody. And then it's time to do it all over again with Survivor. So Survivor, we're going to talk Survivor Know-It-Alls Wednesday night, talk to the next person voted off, first person voted out after the merge, and then we'll do it all over again, Survivor Podcast, come Thursday night. So have fun watching all of the shows. Hope everybody has everybody celebrating Easter. Have a very happy Easter, and we'll be back soon. And thanks to everybody also using our links for Amazon.com. Always appreciate it when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Have a good week, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye.